Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Western advertising agencies are beginning to join with ad agencies in Africa. They are working together to attract international businesses that want to sell their products and services in Africa. Ann Ball will have that story for us today.
Many overseas companies have little experience dealing with Africa. They do not know much about the culture or the way things are done on the continent.
Researchers say they are worried that the decreasing number of hippos in Africa's rivers is hurting the continent's ecosystems. Marcia James has that story for us.
As researchers learn more about the importance of hippos, there are fewer of them. Hippo numbers are dropping across sub-Saharan Africa. There has been a 10 to 20% drop in the past 10 years.
We will bring you those stories and much more today. Hello, I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America in Washington, and this is As It Is, a daily 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. In addition to the stories about African advertising agencies and African hippos and rivers, you will also hear Jonathan Evans' weekly technology report today. This week, he tells us about a device invented by American scientists that reduces stress from walking without using a motor. It is a small, wearable addition to shoes that makes walking easier.
You really don't notice it until then you take it off. And when you take it off, you realize that it was there and giving you a boost.
And later, we bring you our regular weekday series, The Making of a Nation. Today, we will look at the first 100 days of the administration of President Franklin Roosevelt. He worked hard to pull America out of the depths of the Great Depression in the 1930s.
Washington was filled with activity. The air was full of energy, like a country sky during an electrical storm.
Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Western advertising and public relations agencies are increasingly joining with African advertising companies. They are working together to attract international businesses that want to advertise products or services in Africa. The continent has been considered the last frontier or undeveloped territory for consumer markets. As we hear from Ann Ball, advertising agencies are now helping international companies become well-known in Africa.
Carrie Ann Stanton is managing director of Engage Joe Public, a public relations agency. She says global communication companies have bought or partnered with many African agencies over the last 2 years. The growing number of mobile devices has helped the growth of locally owned digital agencies in sub-Saharan Africa, countries south of the equator. Carrie Ann Stanton says these agencies are creating their own niche or specialized market and winning plenty of praise.
We're an emerging market, so we know that a lot of people are trying to get into Africa, and a lot of people have failed terribly. So it's very much like there's this shift. The first world is watching Africa for innovation.
Africa claims to be the mobile continent because so many people use wireless technology there. There are predictions that the ability to connect to high-speed internet will increase 20 times over the next 5 years. Studies have found there will be an estimated 930 million mobile users in Africa by the end of 2019. The American Public Relations Agency, GRAE, opened an office in Johannesburg, South Africa. From there, the company will work with clients in Nigeria, Mozambique, Kenya, Ghana, Tanzania, and Botswana. These are fast-growing markets, says Paul Jackson, Managing Director at GRAE, South Africa.
We've seen a lot of multinationals not getting the returns in first world economies and looking to the third world markets and emerging markets for additional returns. Obviously, it's a lot riskier. Obviously, these are markets that they don't understand, but they know that Africa is a place that they've got to be.
Many overseas companies have little experience dealing with Africa. They do not know much about the culture or the way things are done on the continent. Also, there is a lack of information to help with the marketing. So, having employees who are experts in the area and culture is helpful for companies.
So it's really important that, you know, any client and or agency understands the various markets that they're targeting, those various nuances, the different cultures, the key insights that's going to make their product move in a very tough landscape. You've got to have on-the-ground representation. You can't fly by remote control.
Fraser Lamb is Chief Executive Officer and Africa Chairman of McCann World Group. He says poorly informed advertising campaigns can be costly. He says a MasterCard campaign designed for Africa but developed in Dubai did not work.
The work we found was a disconnect from the reality. For instance, in our Truth About Africa, we put a slide there that talks about the number of countries who actually have Safari versus the perceived number of countries. So the artwork that came from abroad was largely about Safari. And we said, well, you know, if this is for Kenya, it works, whereas in Nigeria, it's scarce. So it's a campaign that had to be adapted.
Mr. Lamb says better research showed that Nigeria's MasterCard holders knew more about Harrods, London's store for high-priced goods, than elephants and lions. I'm Ann Ball.
The hippopotamus is an animal very important to the health of Africa's rivers and lakes. Their dung, or solid waste, helps Africa's aquatic ecosystem. But Marcia James tells us researchers are warning that hippo populations are decreasing, and that could damage ecosystems.
The hippopotamus is the third largest land mammal after the elephant and rhinoceros. Hippos spend as much as 16 hours a day in the water. They go on land at night to feed. They eat more than 200 kilograms of tropical grasses at each feeding. They return to the water where they release their waste. Douglas McCauley is an assistant professor of several environmental and life sciences. He and his team at the University of California, Santa Barbara, decided to study the waste of hippos.
Well, we started looking at hippopotamus and realized that a big part of the story was their poop, was this vast amount of nutrients and energy that are moved across systems via their eating and their defecations.
He says scientists are interested in how hippos cross the line of ecosystems. He says living in both the land and water worlds means hippos are important providers of nutrients.
Because they're eating lots and lots of stuff on land and then taking that all back to the place where they rest in the water and lakes and rivers and then basically dunging that all out. And it turns out to be a huge amount of material and energy and nutrients, of the sort of natural fertilizer that's moved across these boundaries.
Each year, hippos provide over 60,000 kilograms of dung to African lakes and rivers. Douglas McCauley says the dung is also used as a communication device. He says a more powerful male hippo will throw dung from its tail to a less powerful male. The study also showed that some species of river fish need the dung in their diets. Mr. McCauley says some of the nutrients in the dung are the building materials of life. Some fish get the nutrients by eating the dung directly. Others feed on insects that eat the dung. But as researchers learn more about the importance of hippos, there are fewer of them. Mr. McCauley says hippo numbers are dropping across sub-Saharan Africa. He says there has been a 10 to 20% drop in the past 10 years.
And beyond how many there are, they're in a lot fewer places. There are entire countries that have completely lost hippopotamus. Egypt, for example.
Douglas McCauley says humans are responsible for most of the drop in the hippo population through hunting and habitat loss as human populations spread. I'm Marcia James.
Now, it's time for our weekly look at the latest technology news. This week, we learn about an invention that reduces stress from walking without using a motor. Devices that help people walk were once thought to be difficult, if not impossible, to design. Until recently, such a device required electricity from an external power supply. But now, as our technology correspondent Jonathan Evans tells us, American scientists have built a small, wearable addition to normal shoes. Their invention eases the load on muscles in the leg and makes walking easier.
Stephen Collins and Greg Sawicki are biomedical engineers. They both studied how human beings walk. They found that our ankles and calves perform motions similar to a spring joined to a clutch. In an automobile, a clutch is used to connect and disconnect a driving or driven part of an engine or other piece of equipment. The researchers found that the human body parts are able to both store and release energy, just like a spring. Stephen Collins works with Carnegie Mellon University in Pennsylvania. Greg Sawicki is with North Carolina State University. He spoke to VOA on Skype.
We found in basic science experiments that system, your calf and Achilles tendon, works a lot like a catapult. So the muscle holds on to the tendon, and your body actually stretches your Achilles tendon quite a bit and then stores energy in the tissue, and then it's given back to you to propel you forward in the world.
Mr. Sawicki says he and Mr. Collins designed a mechanical device that performs the same kind of energy give and take outside the body. Their new ankle exoskeleton is made of carbon fiber and metal. It connects to ordinary shoes and takes over part of the work of walking. Mr. Sawicki says the device reduces the amount of energy required for walking by as much as 7%. The unpowered ankle exoskeleton can help people walk farther with the same amount of energy. It also can restore normal movement for individuals who have trouble walking. Mr. Sawicki says it takes only a few minutes for someone to get used to the ankle exoskeleton. He says the wearer quickly learns to use less muscle energy, letting the device do much of the work.
You really don't notice it until then you take it off. And when you take it off, you realize that it was there and giving you a boost.
Mr. Sawicki says the device is mainly meant for people recovering from a surgery operation or a stroke. He adds that anyone who spends a lot of time walking, like hospital workers and policemen, could use the device. There are no plans to make the ankle exoskeleton available to the general public. But the inventors say some manufacturers have expressed interest in the device. I'm Jonathan Evans.
Well, thanks, Jonathan. Now it's time for our daily The Making of a Nation program. This week in our series, we talk about the first 100 days of the administration of President Franklin Roosevelt. His inauguration speech in March 1933 gave hope to millions of Americans. The new president promised to fight the Great Depression that was crushing the economy. His administration launched into action even before the inauguration ceremonies were finished. Back then, newly elected presidents were sworn into office in March instead of January. Roosevelt's aides began work even as he and his wife Eleanor watched the traditional inaugural parade. The lights of Washington's federal office buildings burned late that night. And not just on that night, but the next night and the next night, too. The nation was in crisis. As Mario Ritter and Doug Johnson tell us, there was much work to do.
The first 3 months of Franklin Roosevelt's administration were an exciting time. Roosevelt got Congress to pass more pieces of important legislation during this short period than most presidents pass during their entire term. These 3 months are remembered today as the 100 days. Sunday, March 5th, was the day after the inauguration. Roosevelt asked Congress to begin a special meeting later that week, and he ordered all the nation's banks to close until the economy improved. Roosevelt also banned the export of gold. Congress met on Thursday, as Roosevelt had asked. It passed everything that the new president wanted. Both the House and Senate approved Roosevelt's strong new banking laws in less than 8 hours. Roosevelt signed the bills into law the same day.
The next day, Friday, Roosevelt called on Congress to cut federal spending. Once again, Congress met and approved Roosevelt's request immediately. 2 nights later, Roosevelt spoke to the nation in a radio speech. His warm, powerful voice traveled to millions of homes. he gave many listeners the hope that they could once again trust their banks and political leaders. On Monday, Roosevelt called on Congress to make it legal to sell beer and wine and to tax those sales. At that time, there was a national ban on alcohol. But once again, Congress agreed. Roosevelt's success in passing these laws excited the nation. People across the country watched in wonder as the new president fought and won battle after battle.
Washington was filled with activity. The air was full of energy, like a country sky during an electrical storm. People from around the country rushed to the Capitol to urge the administration to support their ideas. Bankers came by the thousands to win favorable legislation. Experts of all kinds offered new ideas on how to rescue the economy. Ambassadors came from Britain, France, Brazil, Chile, China, and many other countries. They came to speak with Roosevelt on economic and diplomatic issues. And members of Roosevelt's Democratic Party arrived by the thousands. They came to seek jobs in the new administration. Americans watched closely what was happening in Washington, and they liked what they saw. They had voted for action. Now, Roosevelt was giving them action.
One of the most important areas of action for the new administration was agriculture. American farmers had been hurt more than any other group by the economic depression. The average income of American farmers had dropped in 3 years from $162 a year to just $48. Farm prices had fallen 55%. The buying power of the average farmer had dropped by more than half. Many farmers could not even earn enough money to pay for their tools and seed. The main cause of the problems for farmers was that they were producing too much. There was too much grain, too much meat, too much cotton. As a result, prices stayed low. The situation was good for people in cities who bought farm products, but it was a disaster for the farmers who produced those products.
Franklin Roosevelt attacked the problem by limiting production. His administration put a new tax on grain products. The tax increased their price and reduced demand. The administration paid cotton farmers to destroy some of their crops. And it bought and killed 5 million pigs to reduce the amount of meat on the market. It was a strange situation. Some Americans had trouble understanding the economic reason why food had to be destroyed so people could have enough to eat. But more officials agreed that this was the only way to limit supply, raise prices, and save farmers. The plan worked. Production quickly fell. Hot weather and bad harvests in 1933 and 1934 reduced the amount of grain even more. As a result, prices rose. Farm income increased 50% in 4 years.
The administration also attacked the problem of falling industrial production. At the time of Roosevelt's inauguration, the production of American goods had fallen by more than half in just 4 years. Business owners reacted by cutting their costs. They lowered wages and reduced their number of workers. But these actions only reduced the number of people with enough money to buy goods. And so production went down further and further. Roosevelt created a National Recovery Administration that sought to gain the cooperation of businesses. Many business owners agreed to follow codes or rules, such as limiting the number of hours people could work. They also agreed to raise wages and stop hiring child labor. And they agreed to improve working conditions and to cooperate with labor unions. At the same time, Roosevelt created a Public Works Administration to provide jobs to unemployed workers. The federal government put people to work on building dams, bridges, water systems, and other major projects.
On monetary policy, Roosevelt and the Congress decided that the dollar should no longer be tied to the price of gold. Other action in Washington included a bill for homeowners that helped many Americans borrow money to save their homes. And a bank insurance bill guaranteed that Americans would not lose their savings. This insurance greatly increased public faith in the banks. Roosevelt and Congress created a Civilian Conservation Corps to put young men to work in rural areas to protect the nation's natural resources. These young men did things like plant trees and improve parks. They also worked with farmers to develop farming methods that help protect the soil against wind and rain.
One of Roosevelt's most creative projects was a plan to improve the area around the southern state of Tennessee. The Tennessee River Valley was a very poor area. Few farms had electricity. Forests were thin. Floods were common. Roosevelt and Congress decided to attack all of these problems with a single project. The new Tennessee Valley Authority built dams, cleared rivers, expanded forests, and provided electricity. It succeeded in helping farmers throughout the area, creating new life and hope.
The 100 days, the first 3 months of the Roosevelt administration, were a great success. One reporter for the New York Times newspaper observed that the change from President Herbert Hoover to President Franklin Roosevelt was like a man moving from a slow horse to an airplane. Suddenly, the nation was moving again. There was action everywhere. Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal policies during the 1930s changed the face of American government. The new president and the Congress passed legislation that helped farmers, strengthened the banking system, and supplied jobs for millions of workers. One of the results of Roosevelt's policies was a stronger movement of organized labor in America. We will tell that story tomorrow, here on As It Is. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from VOA Learning English Headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from The Voice of America.